Thank you for the invitation, and it's great to be the last speaker of the day. No one can be more happy if I finish early, right? So this is joint work with my advisor, let me just describe the layout for a bit. So the first part is going to be just introduction and results, and the basic computational tool, which is the BERT property, and then I'm going to just try and convey the ideas of the proof, at least one proof. So let's just start. We have directed polymers in space, time random environment, but you know, 45 degrees tilted, so it looks like an upright path, nearest neighbor. In M2, the space-time environment, I denote by omega, and pi mn is just the set of all the paths upright from 1,1 to mn. The quenched probability measure is just exponential. Beta is the inverse temperature, and the energy of the path is just the sum of the omega weights. And the normalization constant, ZMN, is what we call the partition function. It's slightly different than usual. We're just summing the energy of all paths. So, and P, that fat P there, is a probability distribution on the environment. Assume that omega is IID under P, the omega U. So what is the question that we are interested in? So we want to find large deviations or concentration inequalities for the partition function. So some previous results, concentration inequalities, they're coming in various favors for various reasons. So this is just mentioning some, Carmona and Hu, order n for concentration inequality for the partition function in the Gaussian environment, Comets, Shiga, Yoshida, order n to 1/3 concentration inequality, but arbitrary environment. More recently, Liu and Wadblad, order n concentration inequality, any environment. And then for the large deviations, at least there are upper and lower tail normalizations, like in Carmona and Hu. In the Gaussian environment, you get both. Then, Benary proved lower day large deviation regimes for the partition function under some assumptions. And then there's also the Cranston, Gauthier, Mountford paper, which is the, again, upper and lower tail normalizations and regimes, but for the parabolic Anderson model. So what we actually do is, I have a question mark there, but what we actually do is to find an explicit rate function for a particular polymer model. Let's see. Okay. So the first thing is to make sure that the rate functions exist, and they are. It's just a superadditivity argument. So these are the assumptions. We have a d-dimensional rectangle. So we are only allowing the polymer to take steps parallel to the positive axis. So it's not completely general in distance in higher dimensions. Dimension 2 is the same. General IID weights with that exponential moment assumption, and we are working with any inverse temperature as long as it's smaller than Xi, where Xi is the maximum or the supremum of anything that assumption is working. So here is the theorem. So this is a function of beta, the endpoint, R. Many things are changing here. J is convex in UR, continuous, and as long as it's finite, and it's also continuous on the boundary of the rectangle. And let me just say, even though I don't say anywhere in the talk or using it, that if you let beta go to infinity, and you put some scaling beta in there, then this large deviation rate function actually converges to the large deviation rate function for last path H percolation. Okay. Right. I guess the idea is that we need to know how many steps it takes in each direction, and you can do it anywhere after that. Okay, so this is the particular model. So the log gamma model, we are in dimensions 1 plus 1, or the way that I shifted the rectangle is dimension 2. IID weights with this particular distribution. So the omega weights are log-wise, and where the y-inverses are gamma with parameter mu, the other parameter of the gamma is 1, and the gamma density is given by that formula over there. For this particular model, the partition function, the law of large numbers for the partition function can be explicitly computed. It's a known function, FST of mu. I guess I need to say what ST are. NS and NT are the endpoints, sorry, the terminal sites for my polymer. And the rate function I denote by JST. I'll come to more particular stuff about this model in a second. So here is the result. For that choice of parameter values, C, mu, and theta, we define two functions, HC of theta and DC of theta. And they are both logarithmic moment generating functions. And here we have the exact rate function for the log gamma model with the gamma mu weight. So I have it in. So this is what comes out from the computations if you do it. But then you do a change of variables, and this is what it looks like. It's not terribly precise, especially because of those log gammas that show up all over the place. And let me just say, what is the change of variables here? The change of variables are making V to be HC of something. With that choice of parameters, the function HC is invertible, so there is no problem with that. And we can do stuff with this rate function. I'm going to say in a second, but we can find some asymptotics close to the zero, unique zero or not, and stuff like that. Okay, and then we don't just want, so this result here, we have a fixed endpoint, it's NS and T. We can have the more general model where the endpoint can be anything and the polymer takes n steps. This is like the usual 1 plus 1 dimensional polymer. So in that case, the rate function is exactly what you get if you say that the endpoint is S over 2, S over 2, and the polymer takes n steps. And here are the asymptotics that I was telling you about. So I make some assumptions to make the computations easy, but they're not really necessary. So if S and T are 1, and R naught is that thing there, which is exactly the value of the law of large numbers for the partition function, and then we deviate from R by epsilon for some epsilon positive, then the maximizing C from this theorem here, so if with those assumptions and an extra one on the mu, we can eliminate that supremum, no problem. And then the maximizing C from that theorem is of order square root of epsilon. And the asymptotics for the rate function are of order 3/2. So let me just say one thing on the proof. It comes from the power series expansion of the digamma and the trigamma function, which are the derivative of log gamma. And just as a remark, the order 3/2 on the rate function is consistent with the order n to the 2/3 fluctuations for the partition function. It's a very extreme tail of the partition function, but at least it's consistent. We didn't something wrong from the beginning. Okay. Now, so what is the main computational tool for this? The answer is the Burke property, which is, I'm going to explain it in a second, but we need an extra thing for the model. We need to put boundary weights. So what are the boundary weights that we are putting? So the horizontal weights, these red here, we are assuming they are gamma of theta. And that theta is the same theta that showed up in the maximization principle for the theorem. And then the vertical weights are gamma mu minus theta, that's the blue there. The gray, where the bulk weights are the normal ones, gamma mu, and the weight at the origin, we just assume it's 1, it doesn't matter, or pi. And with this, now this boundary model, or the model with boundary, allows for specific calculations, and the reason, like I said, is the Birch type property. And the reason it's called Birch type property is because there is a similar property that works for the corner growth model, which is an immediate generalization of Birch's theorem for MM1Qs. So what is the Birch property for this boundary model? Given this initial weight, we can compute the partition function for all Mn in Z2 plus. And then we define new weights, UMn, VMn, and XMn, given by this formula, after we computed from the original weights all the Zs. Now, for any undirected edge, we also denote TF to be either UX or VX, depending if the edge is horizontal or vertical. So here is a picture. So this is a downright path with those edges. So the red things are the edges of the path, and all the orange balls here are the interior points of the path. And the theorem says that the new variables that we computed using the Zs, they follow, are independent, and they have the correct marginals. So one word on how the proof goes for that. You start, the way we have the model, we start with that downright path, which is vertical and horizontal, and then we look at the corners, and we just flip a corner. Then when you flip the corner, you start using these formulas over here. But that way, you can use induction on the number of corners and on how many corners you flipped, and you get that for any downright path, you have this result. So all the edges that we attach horizontally are independent, vertically are independent, and all the orange things there are independent among themselves, among everything, and they have the correct marginals. Okay, so why is this useful? So here, I'm going to start describing the proof. So the important thing is to decompose the partition function of the model with boundary. So we decompose according to the exit point. So we are conditioning where the exit point of the polymer will be. And if we do that, then the shaded, the orange and the blue there, the shaded part is the partition function for a polymer that exits from that point over there. So here it exits from 0L. The polymer has to go up if it's going to exit from there, so it's a product of the vertical weight. And then it enters the bulk exactly at that point. This square here is just to denote that we are using a later point. We are using that square over there in the computations, and NS and NP is the terminal point. Okay, so now using this decomposition, we can write the partition function like this. So Z, N, S, and T is going to be the sum over all paths of the product of the Y weights. And remember, the Y were log gammas, so with the exponential over there and the beta temperature equal to 1, everything goes away and you have the multiplicative weight Y. And then we decompose whether the polymer chain exits from the vertical direction or the horizontal direction. And here are all the partition functions we sum them all up, we get the actual partition function for the polymer. And using Birch's property, we can write using Birch's property on Z, N, S, and T, we can write it as the product of the vertical weights times the product of the horizontal weights on top. So this is the second coordinate of the horizontal weights. So let me just show one right from here. You're using these two formulas. Actually, you're using that formula. And when you start multiplying these U weights, stuff start to cancel out, and eventually you are stuck with Z and F and T. Oops, too fast. Okay, not sure about that. Okay, so now we know that Z and S and T is this thing here, and it's also that thing up there. So we divide by the product of the vertical weight. And havoc and mayhem. I'm sorry, I know this is a very unfriendly slide. It is. So let me say one more thing. All of these are independent among themselves. All of these are independent among themselves. Together they are, and so we need to eliminate at least one of the two one of the two terms there. So we divide by one of them. And then on one side, we are just having the product of IID gammas. And on the other hand, when we divide the other side, we get that mess up there, which we make prettier by saying that eta k is the product of the vertical weights inverse, starting from negative k and going up to nt, where k now takes values between negative nt and negative 1. There is no chance that the polymer will exit diagonally, so eta minus 1 is, sorry, eta 0 is just eta minus 1. And then for positive k's, it's just the product of the horizontal weight times the product of the vertical weight. And in this case now, these two things are actually independent among themselves. So, and then after we, with that definition, then the partition function, sorry, then the product of the U weight looks like the sum of the product of two independent random variables. Okay, so here's here's the idea of the proof using the estimates. R sub S of R is going to be the large deviation rate functions for the rate function for the product of the UIs. And then, using the previous trick, we can change that product of the UIs with that sum, where each term now is a product of two independent random variables. And then that the log of that sum should behave, it's a squiggle, should behave like the maximum over all k's of the log of one, the maximum, like the biggest term over there. And then that maximum can be pushed out of the log and out of the probability. And then somehow the goal is to interchange the position. Sorry, first you need to push that into the in an inverse inside. Then you want to take limits. The problem is that this thing here also depends on n. So in order to do that, like all the work is there, just making sure that when you take the limit, this maximum over all k's will become this infimum over all a, where a is a macroscopic cutting point for the polymer from negative t to s. And the remaining thing, it's the remaining thing is just the rate function for the sum of two independent random variables, this random variable there and that random variable there, and then show that that's going to be an infimal convolution of the rate function for that one and the rate function for that one. So the kappa A over there is the rate function of the log eta k's, and the JAST is the rate function for the log Z k's, where k is the exit point and a here is the macroscopic exit point. And after, so all of this is verified. The next to last squiggle and the last squiggle is the one that is hard. But you can have that the rate function, which is known, that's just the sum of independent random variables, is the infimum of the infimum of, is the infimum of our infimal convolution. And then when you know that, you take the Legendre transform. So these are the convex duals. So R star will be the supremum of the duals of the of the rate of the infimal convolution R star is a function of theta and C. So, and when you go through the computations, the kappa star is going to be, kappa star, after going through the computations, is going to be a function times A, and plus another piece that does not depend on A at all, which we move out on the other side. So that's why that changes into S now. And then you sort of want to make that look like a Legendre conjugate of something, if possible. And then magic happens. So with a certain choice of parameters, that U theta is invertible, but you have to pay a price that S up there has to become a T. So now we're just looking in a square. Of course, it doesn't matter because the exit point can be anything we want. If we can find the JATT, it's still okay. After you can invert the U theta, this looks like the Legendre transform now of the functions gxc of A, and the supremum is taken over A, so it's going to be a function of V on the other side, and that's g star of C. So I'm cheating a bit. First of all, in order to use something like that, one needs to make sure that function is convex with certain properties and stuff like that, which checks out. Then now we know, so this is a known function, so we know g star, so we can invert the transformation and we can compute ja of tt, which is going to be the supremum of that, which is going to be the supremum of arcc plus the functions gxca, but the function gxca is the conjugate of G star, so that's why this extra supremum shows up there, and this is the form of the rate function. So that is exactly how we get the rate function for the theorem. For the last slide, the proofs for the unconstrained model, like a free endpoint, I'll stop in a second, but see, when you put animation, the thank you, and there are 50 slides there is a problem. Okay, this is the last slide, and I should not press the later point. So, the inequalities there for the partition functions translate to inequalities for the constrained endpoint rate functions, and then it's just a convexity argument to get that JS over 2S over 2 is actually the correct value for the unconstrained endpoint. So now that that is being said, I'll press a later pointer. And stop here.